Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Hashtag My Investing Story. And good evening. My name is Ann McMillan. I am the master builder, helping to build wealthier businesses and lives. And I'm excited to be here with you again with another episode of this show. Ione McNeil, my co-host, and myself are volunteers with Better Investing. And Better Investing is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization helping individual investors and organizations to learn how to become better investors. And as a part of the history of this show, we want to welcome all of our listeners, our callers, and those who may be listening in the future to please remember to like, comment, and share the show. Every week, we come on and we bring you another guest. Well, today, we are honored to bring back a guest that was with us before, and that is none other than Mr. Bobby Clark. This will be part two. So to tell you a little bit about Mr. Clark, Bobby is the founder of Clark on Money Coaching Services. His firm has recently started and specializes in helping men who feel stuck financially. And he's going to share with us why he shared this with his clients and why, as a Better Investing member, he is teaching these principles and making a difference in the lives of many. Now, he earned his CFP certificate in professional education from the College of Financial Planning. He's a past associate director of the Georgia chapter of Better Investing. And help me welcome Ione McNeil as she kicks off another phenomenal show, as we talk about dividends on one hand and also why it's important to become a Better Investing member, in particular with Mr. Bobby Clark. Ione?
Thank you. Hi, Mr. Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing great, Ione. Thank you for asking, and thanks for inviting me to come back on your show.
Yes, we are happy to have you because, you know, when we first brought you on, it was just good to hear a Black man's perspective of actually learning from his father. I remember the conversation clearly about overhearing your dad's friend come to the house and your dad really didn't want to do it and it piqued your interest. So actually take us back very quickly to how you first found out about investing and how it's actually prepared you to retire and really live a fruitful life within your retirement.
Well, you mentioned my dad, so it starts there. But actually where it started originally with my grandfather. My grandfather, he shined shoes for a living, and he went to work at a barbershop, at a upscale barbershop during that day in the city, and he would shine businessmen shoes. And one of the benefits of that is he knew everybody in town, and he knew all of the men's business because that's what you do in the barbershop. But one interesting fact about that was that as I was a kid at that time, he bought me a shoe shine kit. And I was so excited about that shoe shine kit because I really looked up to my grandfather and wanted to be like him. So I had a shoe shine kit, and he told me to go out and make some money. Well, the first thing I did was I had to find customers, and I found, well, my dad was my first customer, and my dad paid me 20 cents for each pair of shoes that he shined. So that was my first experience with earning money, owning a business, and learning about money, and that started the motivation in me just to keep it going. My other job that I had based on my father, his best friend in town was the owner of a dry cleaners. And during that time, the owner told me, says, I'm running short of clothes hangers. For every clothes hanger you bring me, I will give you 2 cents. So I was going through my parents' closet, my grandparents' closet, to collect all of these hangers so I could earn some money. Well, it goes back to that time. You know, those times, and my dad was a small business owner. He brought home the receipts every day. So we would count pennies and roll nickels and roll dimes and quarters and just counted money. So that was part of my upbringing to earn money. And fortunate enough, I was around money. I didn't know if we had enough money or not, but it was just always some money there. And my mom was a school teacher. She taught second grade, so I couldn't bring home bad grades. So between the two of them, it just was a time where I learned values of education. I learned the values of how to handle money, living out of much less than you make, paying bills on time, savings, and those kind of lessons just stayed with me until I was an adult, and I just continued to follow up on those lessons and practices that I learned at an early age.
I'm so glad you took us all the way back there because, you know, on the one hand, since the 90s, we've moved into this world of technology and everything becomes digital. But I think the young generation, my generation, the generation after me, ends up missing out on money being a physical thing and actually having stories of a connection with it, actually seeing their parents take cash out of their wallet or their purse and make transactions and actually practice math in their heads. Because so much of us grew up when we were kids going with our parents shopping, we used, you know, on an everyday or weekend basis, practice math skills because we were engaged with shopping. But now, you know, with the swipe of a card and the tap of a phone, you know, you can kind of miss out on the math opportunity using math, the application of math in everyday experiences. So thank you so much for taking us back to that. But now move us forward into when you learned about investing, now that we know how you started with saving and education, when did you learn about investing and how did that inform you being an employee or deciding to be an entrepreneur, but also being an investor?
The thing with investing is once you have start making money, upbringing was to always save, and try to have something for a rainy day. And once you get to that point that you do have something for a rainy day, then there's maybe some additional funds available, and you try to find things to do with it. A lot of times you just spend it because that's what, you know, you do with money. But in order to make money grow, in order to be a wealth, you're going to have to invest in something, you know, whether stock or real estate or whatever, but you're going to have to do some kind of investing. And for me, it was just the fact that I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and I just heard a conversation from a friend of my dad telling him about investing. And it just, the guy was very impressive. He was a banker. You know, he came to my dad's store. He was always dressed in the suit and the tie and the shoes shining. The car was always freshly washed and all of his hair was always in place. Just an impressive man. And he just impressed me with the conversation about investing. And he was encouraging my dad to do that. And so I just was there and I heard that several times and I decided, hey, I'm going to give it a try. And that's what I did. And based on his information, his guidance, I just started investing, and I really, really enjoyed it. I had the background of enjoying money and things like that. So the next logical step was to be some type of investing, and the stock market was the choice.
So at what age did you make your first investment purchase? And if you don't mind sharing, what was the first thing you purchased?
I was about, I think, maybe 24 at the time when I bought my first share of Southern Company. I did that. And back then, you had to go into the brokerage. There was no online banking or anything or computers or anything like that. Cell phones, that didn't exist back then. So everything was basically in a magazine or a book or a pamphlet or something of that type of publication. And you had to actually go to the brokerage house, or the broker would call you on the phone, talk about a possible purchasing or investing. But typically you would go to the brokerage house to make that transaction. And also, it wasn't that much on TV like it is today about the business channel and things like that. When I walked into the brokerage house for the very first time, there was men sitting around the wall, older men, I might say, and they was watching the stock market on a ticker tape machine that was attached to the wall, and that's how they tracked the stocks for the day and how they saw the price move up and down based on that, because it wasn't something that would be on TV all day long.
Wow. Could you give us the decade that you started in?
I guess I'm telling my age, but that's the truth. That's the way it was.
Hey, was it the 70s? Was it the 80s?
It was in the 80s, yeah.
Okay. No, just to give it some perspective, because I don't think people realize how much, not just investing, but the financial industry overall has changed.
Yeah.
You know, not just in the last 10 years, even the last 20 years, last 30 years. And I'm interested because at this time, when you walked into the brokerage firm, were you in Savannah? Were you in Georgia?
No, I was in my hometown in Florida. Yeah, Panama City, Florida at the time. And there was only one, at the time, only a small city. There was only one brokerage house there, so everybody used that one. But, you know, back then it was a lot harder to get information. It was a lot harder to find people who were discussing investing in public or willfully and discussing that, having that conversation. So you had to really have access to the material the information, and sometimes it was just hard to get because, like I said before, there was no internet. Where I got my information from was either the library, which is the public library, or the newsstand. So you had to go buy magazines or find a book that somebody had written about investing. Other than that, it was just hard to find.
Right, and so I want you to actually walk us through, you know, your education process and the resources you used, albeit I know it was limited. But what were some of the books that maybe you picked up, or how did you start to understand, you know, the financial sector of the newspaper, you know, and then too, when did you possibly find out about Better Investing and eventually join Better Investing?
Well, my favorite magazine back then at the time was Money Magazine. And really, it was my favorite because of the fact that it was at the newsstand. And you could go to the newsstand and read the magazine. You could thumb through the magazine while you're at the newsstand. Or then you could purchase the magazine and bring it home and do further reading and in-depth studying of it. The Wall Street Journal was another source that I had access to. So those are the two publications that I really got started with. But Money Magazine was the one that really got me going.
And when did you go to college? If so, what was your major?
I majored in psychology. And even at our college library, there wasn't much about investing at the time. It just wasn't much information there about the nuts and bolts of investing. They talked about stocks and things like that, but just how to do it and how to get started, it wasn't much information that I had access to that.
Yeah, I just wanted people to know what your major was, because even though you were exposed to money at an early age and had, you know, even entrepreneurial ventures, you didn't study money. And I think that it is important for people to know that you don't have to go to college and study finance or study accounting to be able to, number one, understand the importance of investing, and number two, become a successful investor. One of the questions our audience member asked is, what were the commissions at that time, and did you have to buy a round lot?
that's a great question, because I'm not sure what the commission was at that time, but the round lot was an issue for me, because when I went to the broker and I was talking to him about buying the, he said it's offered typically in lots of 100. Well, I didn't have enough money to buy 100 shares of the lot. So he told me, say, well, we can buy the number of shares that you want, but it's going to take longer for the transaction to go through. Typically, if you bought in lots, then the transaction would go through a lot sooner, a lot quicker. So it took me maybe 3 or 4 days before the transaction actually went through, with the sale actually went through.
Wow. And it's so funny, because I think maybe in 30, almost 40 years, the world of investing is going back to that now that people realize how apps are kind of making their money, consolidating stock purchases on the back end, buying in lots instead of letting individual trades go through. So I think it's important for people to not just understand the history of investing and how the industry has changed, but also understanding how the industry works, you know, because there used to be very high commissions. Now that the commissions are basically zero, you have to ask the question, then how are they making their money? Because then it becomes a kind of a hand-shifting, non-transparent way of a profit-making model. With that being said, one question that comes to mind is, you've been successfully investing for 40 years. 30 to 40 years. How have you seen the power of compounding really impact your portfolio? Was it a certain year mark where you really saw the exponential growth?
Yeah, that's a great question. Compounding is one of the most powerful financial mechanisms ever invented. And what happens is, I know for me, a prime example was when I first started investing and I was trying to build a portfolio and build wealth, it took me forever to get to like $2,000 or $3,000 of investing. It took forever in my mind. Like, I was going to never get to that point, because I had a small amount of money starting out. But the key was that I just continued to invest. And over time, the money began to grow exponentially. And that's what compounding will do for you. Typically, if you're in it for 20 or 30 years, you're going to have far more money than you actually invested into your portfolio because of compounding, reinvesting in dividends and capital gains and things like that. So, yes, compounding is very critical, and it's a very powerful way of growing wealth.
So going back to, you know, your earlier statement about learning how to invest, there are a group of us, I'll say there are a few groups of us, depending on, you know, the era, where and race plays a part, right? Especially blacks who may not have been exposed to the market at all, you know, we can tend to grow up to have a risk-averse mindset. We can be great savers, but never really cross over that line to be also become lifelong investors. What would be your words of encouragement or words of wisdom to those that, you know, still may have that hesitation? Great habits of saving, but have not yet started investing, you know, as they could.
Well, I think the issue with that is just being knowledgeable about investing overall and also learning how to trust the system. I'm going to go back to earlier times where for people, African-Americans, a lot of people didn't bank. They didn't put their money in the bank because there was a trust factor there. So a lot of that can stem from that standpoint. I know when I was a kid, there are people in my neighborhood who didn't use banks. They wasn't going to put their money in the bank. So they just kept everything in the house. Well, you know what happens when you do that. Your money does not grow. You actually lose money. But I fully understand why they did that, because of the system that they were living in, the fact that there was a serious trust issue there. So they just kept their finances to themselves. But now things are not that way. You should, the education or the information is readily available. It's everywhere now. It's easy to get to. It's been rolled out in a way where it's not as hard to understand. You can always go Google something, definitions, or, you know, they've got videos out there, all these kinds of things like that. So the information is there. So we just need to consume the information and then put it to use.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because it really brings up this other point, which is, how do you sort through, especially as a new investor, how do you sort through the best information or quality information? Because we are really in the age of information overload. And as you know, probably better than most people, so much of sales pitches are disguised as information. And, you know, for that new investor that may not be tied to Better Investing yet, but they see everybody investing, what are probably some things that can help them sort through the avalanche of information overload and stimuli to really get connected to the right source so that they can, you know, safely be on their way and start learning and trusting the process?
The best thing that they can do is read for themselves. That's the best thing that they can do. A lot of you, like you said, you hear a lot of stuff on TV. A lot of it is commercial based to get you to do that. But the best way you can do that is read books, read magazines, read publications from credible people. That's where it starts. Find credible people and read their information. If they have blogs, follow the blogs. If they have written books, purchase the books, read the books.
How important do you think investment clubs is for the new investor?
It's very important, because that's where your education comes from. That's where your support system comes from. By being in a club, typically you will have people in the club who have some experience, who are already seasoned investors. They will have a training system that can be implemented, or you can follow step by step. If you get stuck or need some help, you can always reach out to them. Typically, a club and people in the club are really enjoy helping other people be successful. So with all of that support around you, it makes it a lot easier for you to be a successful investor by having access to the information and the education.
And with that said, throughout your investing journey, were you ever a part of an investment club?
I was a part of a club early on, but I'm not a part of a club now.
Okay. Excellent. And is that club actually still in existence? And was the club a member of Better Investing?
It was not a member of Better Investing at the time. At the time that I was in a little club, we didn't even know that there was a thing as Better Investing. It was long ago. It just was a group of guys that had a little savings club. You know, that's all we had. It wasn't anything in terms of buying stocks and investing like that.
Excellent. Miss Ann?
Yes, thank you so much, Bobby. I want to go back to not quite to the 80s, but can you share the amount? You talked about it took a long time, because I think it's very important for our listeners. And we have listeners at all spectrums. We have listeners who are thinking about investing but are not sure if they have enough. And then we have listeners who are listening and are only thinking about dividends, retirement. Will I have enough when I get there? Will my money be safe? But can you take us back to the beginning when you talked about the long time? How much were you actually investing at that time? And, you know, per period, if you will, $25, $50, $100, whatever that was.
I think what happened was that I saved up a couple of hundred dollars originally to go to the stockbroker. And after that, I think my first stock was maybe $15 a share, somewhere in that range, less than $20, I'm almost certain of that. And every month, I would set aside X amount of dollars, whatever I could. And when I got something like $100, then I would buy more.
Perfect.
So I use that process. But, you know, now you can do it $10, $15, you know, per transaction. Now if you have one of these online brokers or whatever these apps that they have that they use now. So, but, yeah, starting off back then, it was just like a small amount of money that I had. And then I saved up a lump sum and then invested like that.
Well, I think it's very important, and again, I want to just make sure we are able to speak to that group of people, because people, and I'll use myself and Ione too, that investing had a low-cost program when we started, and we were able to put away $20. And I tell people this by $20 story, and they laugh, but it was very real because I had so much debt. And I was blindsided until I got involved with Better Investing, which was NAIC at the time, to understand $20 compounded over a long period of time is the same. If you do it consistently, it will grow. Versus I wanted to wait until I thought I could save a lot of money and then invest. So can you share with us the conversation we were talking about prior to the show starting about your concept of dividend and dividend investing and why you think that's so important?
Well, typically dividend investing in dividend, the stock that you invest in is probably a seasoned stock. It's well run by the management staff, and they have a history of generating a profit. The investors, and they do that on a quarterly basis typically. And what that means is that if you own shares of stock, you will receive a payment every quarter. Well, that payment can easily be reinvested to purchase more shares. And if you repeat that process over and over and over again, over years, decades, that money will actually become a significant amount of wealth. So that's why I like dividends.
Now, did you think about when you started, did you think at this point in your life that your portfolio would be anywhere near it is right now?
Oh, no, I had no idea. I had no idea. I was like the typical person, just buy a stock, you know, just buy a stock and try to make money off of it. I didn't have, you know, I didn't have the knowledge or idea of what was going to happen or how long it was going to take to make any money investing. I just went to buy a stock. And that's what a lot of people do nowadays. They hear, you know, you should invest, you know, you should buy stocks or you should do this. And, you know, you go out and do that, but you don't know why. You don't have the reason why you are doing it, you know, or what problem you're trying to solve by investing, or what does successful investing look like, you know.
Well, now we do have a question in the chat. Thank you so very much, Ann Newman. She asked, do you always reinvest in the same stock or just somewhere in your portfolio?
What I do now, when I was starting out early on, I did invest in the same stock. I just reinvest that when the dividend was paid out. I didn't receive the dividend. I just allowed the holder to reinvest and buy additional shares. But now what I do is I receive the dividend and I look at which is the best purchase in my portfolio at that time, and I will use that dividend to buy that particular stock or stocks.
Now, her other question was, when and how did you learn about better investing?
Well, I stumbled across better investing by hanging out at the bookstore many, many years ago, and I was always looking for information about investing, and I stumbled across this book, the Beale Street Ladies of Investing. This is the group of ladies out of Ohio who really started one of the first investment clubs, and they wrote a book about their success. And when I saw that book and I thumbed through the book in the bookstore, and it had a roadmap, so to speak. It had a guide. And that was interesting to me because I was looking for some guidance. And so I purchased that book and began to follow the investing at that time. At that time, I think it was called NAIC, something like that.
Yes, correct.
I think it was called that. And, you know, you had to use the graph paper and the pencil when you was trying to, you know, chart those stocks and stuff. I'm not sure if anybody on the site remembers this. Maybe, you know,
you mean colored pencils. Do we remember?
Yeah.
Colored pencils, not just
right.
pencils. So
right.
Do we remember what? They had to be sharp and they had to be colored pencils with a ruler.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So that was the days when you really had to, you know, do a lot of work to track these stocks and to find the data. So that's where I started.
All right. Well, the name he's referring to is Beardstown Ladies.
Yeah, that's the
guide to investing. Yes, a wonderful book. And actually, the same thing happened for us. We were recipients of that information also. And I just wanted to take a moment and just remind everybody, in case you did not know, on an annual basis, this would make the third year, our Better Investing volunteers, a few of us have gotten together and we host a financial empowerment. We're going to ask Michelle if he would bring up the flyer. Just going to take a quick commercial break for a second because we want to make sure that all of our listeners and followers and those who are listening on the podcast, I want to make sure you understand you can connect with us and learn at all levels about investing. Because of COVID, we are having a virtual financial empowerment seminar. In addition to, we will be attending the national conference in the fall. So the Better Investing Financial Empowerment Seminar will be held on the 15th of May, 2021, from 8 a.m. to 12:30 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will put the link in the chat. You can register here by clicking the link. But you can also go to Eventbrite, and the information will be found on Eventbrite. If you're listening in the future to the podcast and you want to know how you can connect, how you can register, you can go there and register. But please comment, like, and share, and join us for this financial empowerment seminar as we help you learn how to take control of your financial future. So we will have something for the beginning investors. We will also have phenomenal information for those advanced investors who are at the other spectrum of the investment world, if you will. All right, so back to you, Ayuni. Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you. So thanks for taking us back to how you stumbled literally across better investing. And do you remember the time frame? Was that in the 90s?
Yeah, that was in the 90s. I can't remember the exact year that was, but that was in the 90s when I found that book, yeah.
Okay. So you were actually investing for probably 10 years on your own before coming into NAIC. What type of investor were you before you joined NAIC, better known now as Better Investing?
But during that time, I probably was just investing based on the information that I saw in Money Magazine. Money Magazine was a publication, was still a publication that talked about finances, personal finance, family. They have articles in there about that. But they also have, they talk about different stocks and mutual funds as well. And so I was using that as a guide to invest. And I actually started investing in mutual funds through Money Magazine because they had far more information about mutual funds than they did individual stocks.
So once you joined NAIC, how did you become a different investor?
Well, NAIC, they provided the platform for the knowledge. So with that system, I could really drill down, if you will, and look at the data of stocks. You can look at the sales, you can look at the earnings, you can look at the stock price over a period of time, not just current, but you can go back, several years and project the future based on information there. So that was very helpful. And it also told you just how, what it all meant. You know, you had the definitions in there, the different terms and so forth. So it was just really like an investment Bible starting off for me.
And once you join Better Investing, and we'll get to, you can speak a little bit about how you became a member and also a volunteer. Did you feel like Better Investing really had all of the resources you needed to move forward to add on to how you started, or did you think that there was something else, maybe something else outside that you needed to pull in?
No, Better Investing has all of the resources that you would ever need to be an investor. I mean, you don't have to go outside of the organization to really learn anything. Of course, now they have more access to information than they had when I first started. But even when I started, there was enough information there for the average investor to start and be successful. So you just had to get in there and read the information and learn how to apply it and go ahead and use it. It's enough information there for anyone, especially for the beginner, to really go. And that's important because a lot of times when you start out, you don't know how to do things. You don't know where to go find information or how to do the research. And Better Investing provides that for you. Now, as you get to be more experienced investor, then you can do other things. But starting out is the best place to be.
Thank you for that. So with you joining NAIC, now BI, and learning What made you become a volunteer? Because you are a past director of the Georgia chapter. What made you step up your level of commitment to start actually sharing with others in a service role?
Well, that motivation came from the fact that when I attended the annual conference in Orlando, I saw that there was a need to educate people about investing. And there was a lot of interest there in people there that were young people. As a matter of fact, I think you had an excellent group there. And it just was a fact that, hey, these people are probably where I was at one point in time. And if I had someone, you know, that I could have had access to teach me, to get me going in the right direction, it would have been a lot easier, and I wouldn't have to spend as much time searching for information as I did. So that was the motivating reason to do that, to get out and try to share the information with those people who are looking for information about investing.
I think it's important to talk about delayed gratification because, you know, earlier in the conversation, we spoke about compound interest. We also spoke about how you are now managing and living off a portfolio that you never imagined would be so large. Could you talk to us a little bit about those times in between when, and I know I've experienced it, investing in my Roth IRA at about year 15, when I've never seen that much money before and I'm still, you know, in my late 20s, there is that urge to capitalize on it and pull it out or, you know, celebrate by spending it. What probably got you through staying with it and keeping it in? Because, you know, by year 20, by year 25, 30, you know, the exponential curve really takes hold of the portfolio. But you have to kind of go through the speed bump and not stop. What helped you to, in a sense, keep your money invested so long?
Well, I think the number one thing is the mindset you have about investing. If you're going to invest, the first thing you have to decide is, I touched on it before, but it's why are you investing? What's the why behind it? You know, what problem are you trying to solve by investing? Ask yourself, is investing in securities and stock is the right tool I need to get me where I want to go? What does success look like when I achieve my investment goal? What does that look like? How do I know when I get there? How do I know if I want to be a millionaire? How do I know when that time arrives? So, you know, it's about the mental aspect, because the delayed gratification doesn't start when you start investing. Delayed gratification starts when you are putting the tools in place and putting the right mindset in place to save. Or to not, when you walk into that store and not buy those shoes, because you're going to use that money to invest. So delayed gratification goes back way back there, because if you don't have it in the beginning, chances are you're not going to have it, or it's not going to be stable when you start investing, because the first thing comes up, you're going to sell that stock, and you're going to pull that money out of that investment and buy something. So delayed gratification had to start early on. And, you know, and the second thing is, you know, when you decide why you're investing, why you want to invest, what it looks like, the next thing you have to do is to gain control of your finances. You have to ask yourself, what is it going to take for me to get to where I want to go? And the next step is to ask yourself, to evaluate, where are you currently? usually there's a gap between where you want to go and where you are in terms of investing or savings. And so the plan is you can use the investment tools or investing to close the gap. And that could be a reason why you are investing.
I think you laid it out. I mean, because from the planning aspect, knowing your why is the most important. You are absolutely right. And that is actually why I didn't take it out, because I did have a goal to become a millionaire by 65. So it's that little bit of a purpose that can get you over that hard time. But also habits. Delayed gratification does not start when you start investing. It starts way before that. I mean, that was powerful. Talk to us about how you implemented what you just said. When you started out, what were some of your goals? Was it to retire at 65? Was it to put your children through college with no debt? Was it to pay off your mortgage early? Talk us through what your goals were and then how you were able to achieve those goals through long-term investing.
And that's a great question, because a lot of times we have all of those on the table. We want to do all of those things. And a lot of times you can't do all of them at one time. You may have to stage them. As life goes on, different events come along, and it may change your plans or interfere with your plans or delay your plans as you go along the way. But you can't lose focus. For me, it was, having emergency fund in case something happened where I didn't have to go into my investment to pay a bill or whatever. I needed that. The second thing was, okay, now that I've got excess money that I can invest, do I invest for my kids' college? Do I invest for retirement? Well, at the time, I wanted to do both of those things. So I had to make a decision of which one that I was going to put the most money in, because I knew that my kids going to college at some point was going to come up quicker than my retirement was going to come up. So I focused on that first and was putting, you know, maybe more money in that, because that was coming up faster than my retirement. But I also knew that if I lived long enough, I was going to retire or be retirement age. So I couldn't neglect putting money away for the very long time. So I just divided it up. But my ultimate goal was, okay, I want to retire. So I always made sure that I put money aside for retirement.
And how did you end up meeting those goals? Is it two daughters or
a son and a daughter?
A son and a daughter. And so, based on your original why and intention and purpose for investing for them, were you able to meet that goal by investing enough to contribute to both of their education?
I was able to contribute. I wasn't able to pay off the education in full. That would have been fantastic. But I was able to contribute to their college education expenses and also still contribute to my retirement as well.
Yeah, I think that's important. And if you don't mind sharing, when did you originally think you would retire? And when did you retire? And when did you know it was now okay for you to retire?
Well, my original goal was to retire about 55. That was the goal, about 55. When I was in my 20s, I set a target of 55. Now, you start working and life throw curveballs and things happen. And actually, for a decade, I lost focus on investing because I had kids that were going to college and all the things going on where I didn't put as much money in investing as I should have, or maybe I didn't have the money because I was paying for other things, you know, cars for kids and insurance and clothing and all the kids' activities can be expensive. So the money wasn't going to the investment for my retirement. So what happened was that, but luckily I didn't have to pull money out of that to live. So it continued to invest there and earn interest and earn dividends, and capital gains. So I was reinvesting in capital gains as well. So that savings for retirement didn't go down. It just didn't go up as fast as I thought it was going to go up. So as a result of that decade, they are not really contributing to my retirement. I think it caused me to have to retire at a later date.
And how old were you when you retired?
65.
Okay. So you really only pushed it back 10 years, but it was still at a regular age range that most other, I would say, your peer group is also retiring. One thing I will say, though, is just learning from your life experience. What I think is important to walk away with knowing is you started young enough with what you had, the little bit that you had, so that even though you took a 10-year break of life happening, that early, you know, 20, 25-year-old investment was actually still growing, even though you weren't putting as much or contributing as much as you wanted to. Because I think we all have gaps. I know I had a gap. I didn't always have a job where I could invest the money into my retirement. But the, like you said, the money I did have in it was still growing even though I wasn't contributing. And that is also the real power of compounding with what you already have in there instead of waiting until you make a certain amount or reach a certain milestone to get started. Because, you know, the earlier you can start, the more time you are giving compound to really work to grow what you have.
Yeah, early is very, very important. And there's a lot of data out there. There's a lot of examples out there showing, you know, when a person starts at an early age and go for maybe 10 or 15 years and quit investing, a lot of times that investment will grow larger over time than somebody who starts at a later date, but they invest for more years. So starting early is a huge advantage if you can do that. I would strongly recommend starting as early as you possibly can because time is a great multiplier of your money.
And we just want to reiterate for the I'm going to call it the middle age crowd. When we say early, we're not talking about yesterday versus today. We're talking about today versus tomorrow, because if you are in your 40s right now, it's better than waiting until you're in your 60s. If you're in your 60s, it's better than waiting until you're in your 70s. And I think that, you know, we, instead of getting caught up on age, we really should recognize that the principle we're talking about is a now versus tomorrow principle. Don't beat yourself up for not knowing and not doing yesterday. You have to take care of it now, because now is the only time you have, and it's better than waiting until next year. You know, congratulations to all of the new investors that start in the market last year in 2020. You know, you have a head start rather than waiting until now. So I just wanted to reiterate that, because I don't want people to get discouraged or disillusioned because their 20s, their 30s, their 40s have passed them by. We've had guests on the show start in their 60s, in their 70s, and they are in their 90s and are, you know, still making their money grow, still investing in, you know, well into their retirement. So this really is a lifestyle. And we are so happy to have Bobby Clark from Clark on Money, a Better Investing member, a Better Investing a past volunteer, to just share his story. One thing I'll ask before we wrap up, how has your experience, your personal investment journey, informed how you expose your grandchildren to investing? Because I know you have some wonderful grandchildren that I've met. How are you kind of imparting that experience and exposing them to these concepts early as well?
I think the best thing that anyone can do is to have the conversation within the family. A lot of times we don't always talk about things, about money especially, and we do a disservice to those young folks, especially if we know. We do a disservice to them by not sharing our experiences with money. Kids are very intelligent. They learn by seeing as much as they learn by hearing. And all of our things called money strips, things that you learn about money, your money mindset, it starts at an early age. And what you may see or hear your parents talking about money or handling money, most times that's how you're going to be when you grow up, because you learn that from your parents. So as an adult, if you teach your kids financial literacy, you know, give them allowance. They don't have their own money. They're going to make mistakes, but it's a learning process. And it's better to let them learn and make mistakes while they're under your roof or under your guidance than when they get out on their own, because then it becomes a lot more expensive when they make a financial mistake. So that's what I would say. They've got credit cards now or debit cards now for kids. You know, if that's what you want to do, you know, get your kid a card that has parent controls on it so they can know how to use those things. Because at some point in time as an adult, they're going to get a charge card or debit card or something. If they don't know how to use it, they're going to abuse it. So start early teaching them. Let them handle money, let them see money, and that's the best lesson that they can learn to prepare themselves for adult life.
And what are some parting words to men, I'll say especially Black men who are just now getting started, just now introduced to investing in the stock market? What would be your words of wisdom for them?
Well, I'm going to share a quote with you from Peter Lynch, who is considered one of the most successful stock market investors of all time and author of the book One Up on Wall Street. It's an investment classic. And he says, in the long run, it's not how much money you make that will determine your future prosperity. It's how much of that money you put to work by saving it and investing it. So My message is start saving to be able to invest.
Thank you so much, Mr. Clark.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Ione, as we prepare to wrap up, I just want to just let Mr. Clark know that his Georgia chapter is supporting him, and I just wanted to just make sure that we did that. And as always, always, my namesake, Ann, Ms. Newman, is,
yes,
you know yes. She represents well. And so we just want to give her a big shout out. And you too, to just say that your chapter is represented. And she's also sharing the show, so we want to make sure you know that they'll be able to participate. But also, before we go, Ione, we do want to remind everybody about the stock market game for the youth this summer. And also, Michelle is going to put the link up for the fall Better Investing Beak conference that's going to be held in Texas. So those who will be listening in the future, we just want to remind you, please go to betinvesting.org, and also on Eventbrite, you'll see that information. And please plan to join us in Texas for the big conference. So Michelle is going to put that information up, and Ione is going to share the information about the youth stock market game this summer.
Thank you. So, yes, if you have youth or would like to participate as an adult advisor in our summer stock market experience, please visit us at ClimbUSA, ClimbUSA.org, and click on Summer Stock Market Experience. We have a form for you to fill out there so that we can get your information and follow up with you. If you are a parent wanting to register your child, your niece, your nephew, if you are a youth organization that wants to participate and bring a group of students, if you are an adult that's interested in learning and wanting to volunteer and be a part of the process, there is a form specifically for each of those interests. Fill out the one that best suits your needs or the one that best identifies with your interests and your intent. And we will definitely be following up with you because we are right now collecting all of the interests and doing some planning and organizing and collaboration with credit unions and making sure that the youth not only go through this experience, but leave with what Mr. Clark just spoke about, a savings account at a credit union near them. And also if they are working, opening up a Roth IRA so that they can start investing early. We had phenomenal success last year, and we want to replicate that in the cities that will be participating this year. That being said, also visit us at betterinvesting.org. If you are not yet a member and you want to try out our free trial, please just go to betterinvesting.org and scroll down the bottom of our homepage. You can complete the information to access your free trial. And that really lets you into all of the activities and resources, the magazines, the newsletters, the articles, and the events, even our members-only events. We have a stock selection guide basics class that's actually going on this week to wrap up the four-part series. And if you are interested in attending some of our classes, check out the Chapter New You. You can go to Meet Our Community, and Ms. Ann and I are both chapter directors and volunteers for the South Florida chapter. But, you know, we're all virtual now, and I love visiting the Georgia chapter event. They have a phenomenal mentoring chat on, I think, the second Thursdays of the month. And also the St. Louis chapter, they have an excellent Let's Talk Stocks round robin table, where we study, do SSGs and talk about the value line. And it really is some great activities and communities that can really help you learn and grow as you participate in investing, whether it be new, intermediate, experience. We definitely have something that you could benefit from. So with that being said, again, Mr. Clark, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for part two. Because you were definitely one of our very first guests last year when we first started off My Investing Story. And you know, your wisdom and your experience is really invaluable. And that's why I'm trying to bring as many people that look like us that can share their story and inspire and invigorate the next generation, even the now generation, to get started. Because this is really the last frontier of how we can build wealth in a very democratic way.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you, guys. You have an amazing program, amazing organization in South Florida. You're doing some great work. You're motivating people. You're educating people. And it is spreading. So you guys will be well known all across the country. if you not already are. So you're doing great work, and I'm grateful just to be able to be a part of that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And as you all know, we really want to point people to one of the best organizations that can help you in your investment journey. So shout out to Better Investing. Shout out to Klein. Shout out to Clark on Money. And thank you for all that are involved and listening. And if there's anything, you know, you would like from us, please email us at abetterinvesting@gmail.com. We'll be sure to get back to you, answer your questions. Until next time, thank you so much for joining us and listening to Mr. Bobby Clark on Tech, My Investing Story.
Goodbye.